Hearing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dhamma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dhamma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay. So going for refuge until we're enlightened, no, until we attain enlightenment. So really think about when that might be. When we attain enlightenment. So tonight I wanted to start with a verse from Lama Tsongkhapa, who was a 14th century Tibetan saint who started the tradition that this particular monastery has the lineage from. So think about that as we start. Okay, this opportune human form. Is it coming through okay? Yes? Okay. This opportune a physical form is worth more than a wish-granting gem. You gain its like the once. So hard to get, so easily destroyed. It's like a lightning bolt in the sky, that our life is fleeting like a lightning bolt in the sky. Contemplate this and you will realize all worldly actions are but winnowed chaff. And day and night you must extract some essence from your life. I, the yogi, practiced this way. You, wanting liberation, do the same. So he's really exhorting us to use this human life well, because it is fleeting. That it's constantly under all kinds of change, and that we could lose it in a moment. So to really think about how important this physical form is. And in fact, you know, the teachers say that this is your precious human life. You know, this is your vehicle to attain enlightenment. This is your vehicle to really be able to cultivate all the excellent qualities of wisdom and compassion, and to really purify all our delusions, our misunderstandings, our misconceptions about phenomena, and our delusions that cause us to hurt and harm other sentient beings. So let's just sit with that for a few moments so you can allow the day to settle, to really be able to let the activities of the day just kind of wash away and become more present in the room and attentive to the fact that this is our vehicle. Okay, so let's sit for about 5 or 7 minutes and really pay attention to how precious this body is. You can feel your heart beating. Just kind of think of the different activities that you engaged in today, just today, you know, and particularly watch the different moods that you went through of pleasure and happiness, of joy and irritation and upset and competitiveness and anger. And just observe all the different things that went through and how they're saying, this is your vehicle. Yeah, this is your vehicle. Okay, so we'll just sit for a few minutes. This opportune physical form is worth more than a wish-granting gem. You only gain its like the once. So hard to get, so easily destroyed. It's like lightning, a lightning bolt in the sky. Just feel how precious your life is. Think of all the hurts, the joys, the tumbles, the accomplishments, all contained in this life. And the fact that one day, we all have to say goodbye to this life. So what is truly beneficial to you, for you to do? contemplate this and you will realize all worldly actions are but winnowed chaff. And day and night you must extract some essence from your life. I, the yogi, practice this way. You, wanting liberation, do the same. Any comments from that short contemplation? Oh, sorry. There's a, can you pan that back? Thanks a lot.
After this, you know, I feel like, you know, my life been through a lot of things. Something I doing well, some's not. I'm stumbling many times. And every day, you know, I realize a little more about how to, you know, beautiful to be do something good out from that. And even up until now, I still stumbling, you know, many times. But up until now, I knowing when I'm kind of stumbling. Before, you know, even I did, I falling down, I don't even know, you know, why I'm falling down. But now, you know, I think I'm kind of getting close to get a grip on the thing I should do and the thing I should let go. Uh-huh. And I know when I'm falling and I need to get up, and I know how to maintain and then, you know, take care of this vehicle. You know, before, you know, I said, hey, we're just doing things. But up until now, I realized a lot of things about you saying. But I guess, you know, my vehicle is kind of more than halfway already. So I hope the other half will be better than, you know, the last half.
Right. After the intermission, here's the rest of the show. Right. Anybody else?
I just realize sometimes how little I'm really aware of what's going on in my life. I get so caught up in the day-to-day that there may be a few minutes throughout the day that I really, you know, I'm really aware of what I'm doing and really feel the preciousness of the life. You know, as opposed to being just kind of caught up and going through the, not going through the motions, but just caught up in the day-to-day activities and things without really being there all the time.
Right. Yeah. It's true. It's been an interesting week, actually. How many of you are working on the Sunday contemplation with Ed? Yeah. So the contemplation was utilize every immediate circumstance for meditation, yeah, and particularly the advice, yeah, was really paying attention to what's going on every moment in our lives so that we become aware of our actions. And, you know, what we are in this vehicle are actually pleasure-seeking vehicles. We're always looking for happiness. You know, we always want some kind of pleasure. And so we just gravitate towards these things. And when we don't get it, you know, we get upset and angry. And we become very reactive. And we get into this kind of knee-jerk reaction about how we're going to get what we want and push away what we don't want, you know. And so this contemplation has been really to pay attention to how we're acting when pleasure arises in our life. You know, how do you respond? What are you doing? And when difficulties and aversion and anger arise, what are you doing with your body, speech, and mind? Because we tend to be, like you were saying, you know, just kind of unconsciously just blazing through our day, just doing what we feel we need to do, you know. And it's like if we're accomplishing what we had set out to do, we're feeling good, and if things are on a roll, and if things get in our way, we're upset. Right? So here, Geshe Rapten was saying, really prepare by training your mind as you work with this. And he said, otherwise, if we become completely depressed and discouraged, the study and this practice will be a total waste of time. Right? A total waste of time. So what this vehicle is, this precious human life that we have, is really our vehicle to begin to cultivate those activities, to become aware of the conditions of this body and life. Because even though it's so precious and wonderful and provides a lot of things for us, it has a lot of drawbacks. It has a lot of drawbacks as well. And so, you know, it's really challenging, and it's very humbling too. It's very humbling to have this precious body. You know, as with my work in hospice and working with people who are facing end of life, looking at how they can accept, okay, I can't just pick up and start fresh and move to the next town or start a new job. This is it. You know, the doctors have already signed off on me. I don't have the strength. I don't have the breath. I don't have the physical health to be able to accomplish what I want. And you watch these people with their mental attitudes. How are they dealing with it? You know, and the fact is, every one of us are going to go through this. Yeah. Every one of us have to face this, and how are you going to work with it? So, first noble truth of suffering. I just wanted to share some of these noble truths and just kind of watch, okay? So again, using your vehicle, body, speech, and mind, really picking up, sensing how you're responding to this information, okay? So first, eight aspects of suffering. First one is the suffering of birth. Well, most of us are pretty unconscious of what that was like. But, you know, sometimes the Tibetan masters go through a whole thing about how it's, you know, we're stuck in this womb. We get bigger and bigger, and then we squeeze through the birth canal, you know, and they say that our bones move, our head gets squashed. I mean, that's pretty intense birthing, you know, and then suddenly you're in fluid to having to use your lungs, you know. So suffering of birth, which we've already gone through, suffering of old age, which we're all experiencing, you know. And for those of you who aren't in the second half, we can share with you that it's you know, it's like when you're growing up, you have all these growing pains. You know, your bones are growing so fast. Sometimes you're growing so fast, you break your legs a lot or something like that. Just because you're growing so fast, but with old age, it's the other way. You know, you start breaking your bones because they're getting fragile. They're not able to sustain the kind of strength as before. The suffering of sickness and the suffering of death, that's four of them. Suffering of being separated from that which we desire or we're attached to. the suffering of meeting undesirable events, the suffering of not finding the happiness and pleasures of life that we seek, the suffering of having a body. That's the eighth. The suffering of having a body. Okay, so here the commentary from a teacher says, it's like a magnet that collects sufferings of many kinds. While undergoing sufferings of past karmic actions, it produces further karma, which causes suffering in future lives. So it's really interesting to think, you know, it's like we create karmic actions and negativities with other sentient beings, you know, out of our attachment and our aversion, but they go on. Right, they go on with their life away, but we're the ones that collect the karma, the karmic effect of that, of, you know, the actions that we engaged in. So it's really curious to think about what we do and engage in. Okay, so that was eight. That was eight kinds of suffering. Now, here are six kinds of suffering. Okay, how are you feeling in your body at this point? Okay, six forms of suffering. These are experienced by all beings, not only by humans. So there's uncertainty, you know, realizing that whatever you engage in, there's uncertainty in samsara. There's no guarantee about how things are going to turn out or how things are going to be. Six forms of suffering. Greed. No matter how much we possess, if we have greed, we never have satisfaction. The necessity of repeatedly abandoning our body, for those of you who believe that we have past and future lives, for those of you that don't, there's another kind of suffering. What would that be?
This is it.
This is it. Exactly. This is it. And, you know, I mean, for some of my hospice patients who feel like, you know, this is, when I die, that's it. There's nothing else. It can be pretty daunting to look at for an end of life situation. So there's that kind of suffering too. The entering of consciousness into the union of semen and blood at conception. So that's another kind of suffering. It says, if we were able to form little balls of all the matter of earth, this would still not equal to the number of mothers we've had in other forms of existence. So that's, you know, that's a lot. Another example they give us is, think of if you've had past lives, that if you piled them all, the bones of them all up, that it would be bigger than the planet. Anyway, these are mind-stretching thoughts. uncertain level of where we go in a future rebirth. It's uncertain. No? Especially when you think of end of life, you think, oh, am I going to really reap the consequences of activities that I've engaged in and harm or pleasure that I've caused others in my past? If I'm going to experience those, where am I going to end up? You know, do you have confidence about where you're going next time? The sixth suffering is lack of friends or companionship when we experience both suffering and death alone. Yeah. I mean, when I was diagnosed with cancer, you know, I'm going, how come it's not that other person? No, looking at how you have to really face that yourself and go under the surgeon's knife yourself. No. Okay. Now there's another classification of the three kinds of suffering. the suffering of misery, which is the suffering of suffering. Misery here, it says, sickness, both mental and physical pain, hunger and thirst are examples of this kind of suffering. The second one is the suffering of change. Here it's the impermanence of of things in samsara, and they give the classic example of, you know, you move to sit in the shade because the sun's too hot, and then or you move out into the sun because you've been too cool, then you get too hot, then you have to move to the shade. But to me, that's a pretty passive example. Does someone have a better example for suffering of change? Oh, very good. You sure this is your first class?
My first class.
Okay. Someone else have another good example? Do you want to expand on relationships a little bit? Why is that suffering of change? Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I try so hard at times to get in relationships.
Can you use the mic, please?
I don't know. I feel when I'm not in a relationship, like I'm lonely, and then I get in a relationship, and then
I don't want to be in it.
Pardon me?
And then you don't want
to. It's not that I don't
want
to be in it, but I feel like I don't want you telling me what to do. I want to go fishing now, and I don't want to have to get permission or go do what I want to do. And it's like I'm very considerate on the way in, and then I may get inconsiderate, and I feel boxed in.
That is so beautiful. That's so well said, isn't it? You're so considerate going in, and then you might not be considerate on the way out, right? Why aren't we considerate on the way out?
I think in a way it's hard inside and we consider to go now.
I think usually, you know, when we're outside, we think a beautiful thing in the inside, in there, a lot of wonderful thing. Until you get in there, you see, it's not that so wonderful like the way I thought. And then you run it out. You run out from that. That's
right.
What I think. And usually when we're changing, to me, not everyone can be able to flexible and change and bend with, you know, the situation, environment, and all those. And if we don't be able to kind of so flexible to bending and go with it, we get crushed by it.
We get crushed by it.
Yeah, and then we get crushed. It's hard. And sometimes we can't get up and walk again, like before. Because of that, so many people so afraid about changing. They say, okay, now I know my life like this. I'm okay with that.
Right.
Maybe that's in better, but I'm not too sure it's going to be better for me.
Wow, that's another really
so
good
that's
example.
Why they say,
let's
no.
Let's just stay here.
Yeah, just stay here. Right. I'm happy with
like,
this.
Like, don't try anything else because...
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to fall.
Right.
It's going to hurt in my knees. Yeah. I'm hurting my head if it's going down on the ground. So I'm just, you know, like that. I'm fine.
Right.
Yeah. And then you're always talking about the uncertain thing. I don't know anything. And usually when I don't know, those gonna give me a fear.
Right.
And when I fear about something, I'm uncertain about something, we're not doing.
Right. Yeah.
Safe way.
Uh-huh. Any response to that? Don't move, because it might be difficult out there.
I think I got this through life experience. I had a lot of bump.
You had a lot of bump.
I had a lot of scratch. So that's why I realized all that thing. And until now, I think going through all this class like that make me realize a little more about what was going on with me, with my life, and all the things I've been doing.
Yeah.
And I think for the last month or so, I've been doing a lot of thinking.
Right.
And I realized a lot of stuff, you know, I haven't, you know, realized it before.
Yeah.
Another big pile, you know, in front of me.
Right. Yeah, you have a big pile. We have big piles, and that's just this life. And you're only in your first half yet.
Oh, I think I'm done with first half. Half. So right now, I'm dealing with, like you saying, talking about physically and sickness and all those kind of things. And, you know, one day, suddenly I feel this, and I have to rush to see a doctor and say, what's going on with that? Something in my mind or my head or my body, wherever it is. And
yeah, so, your precious human life?
Yes.
Yeah,
so
something going on here or here or here.
I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure on that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So anybody else have any comment or reflection on our homework that we've been working on? We've been halfway through the week with this utilize every immediate circumstance for meditation and how that's been coming out for you this week, how you're doing with it. Terry, can you use the mic, please?
For me this week, it's
wonderful. What's happened to me is that I've held my tongue.
You've held your tongue.
Yeah.
Has that been skillful?
It's worked.
It's worked.
Yeah, it's worked. because I contemplate on exactly what went on.
Yeah.
You know, on my part, did I have it or not? And I just let it, you know, for the most, I let it fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or in the past, I would have been confronting.
Uh-huh.
With the words spoken, you know, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Right.
If you yield, you need not break.
It's true, they say that. Yeah. So I've been going through, you know, it's kind of like I was thinking as I was coming here, it's like the education of Tenzin, because I've been really, really challenged too, you know, this week, utilizing every moment for of meditation, because I rear-ended somebody. And but fortunately, her car was strong, my car was strong, and all it did was took out the paint where the bolts from my license plate really jammed into her bumper. So, two little spots, first quote, $300, right? Yeah. Okay, keep breathing. The second one, you know, I'm working on this project, really trying to become aware as a monastic, how I can really expand my life to take care of my life better. So I went to visit someone. And as a chaplain, I'm not supposed to criticize, you know, or just kind of be receptive to what's going on. And he starts out with, I hate rich people. I hate rich people. Rich people should all just work really hard and keep 10% and all the rest should go to others. So I thought, I said, well, you got a really good job later on. And he said, but I was using it well. So, so you know, it's like really, so you hate rich people, but you'll take their money. No, they love the money of the rich people if you'll give it to them, right?
I love rich people that give me money.
I love rich people that give me money.
When you said monastic, do you mean somebody that lives in a monastery?
Yes, well, or someone who's taken vows of celibacy.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I had one more. Oh, yes. So I have a talk coming up. And a friend of mine does public radio. So she called and said, I'd love to come to the event. And they freaked out. They said, I don't know if we want you here. I don't know if we want, you know, the hall can hold it. I don't know if the minister would approve. I don't know if the people would like it. So I just canceled it. I'm still going to give the talk. But you know, it's what it's doing is just bumping up against different points of view, just different points of view, and looking at how to just kind of keep that awakened heart or that loving heart open. And so that's my half week so far in this process, you know, car accident. Yeah, conflict. particularly conflict in looking at, you know, your own inner conflict with what goes on in your own life, and especially attachment towards certain things or having things be a certain way, aversion towards things not working out the way you want them to, and just the sense of this is the way I want it, watching the mind of self-cherishing and self-interest rather than really looking at this broader scope of, you know, it's like when I was experiencing that criticism, I watched the wish inside myself to just call somebody and rag about it. And so I said, you know, just take a look at that and observe the mind of upset that wants to justify and find other people to support your view and to justify your upset and pat you on the back for feeling righteous about it, you know. And so I realized that that wasn't really healthy, and so I didn't call anyone. I'm just telling all of you instead. We do therapy. Oh my God! And you're all my therapists. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So anyway, our precious human life. Yeah, this precious vehicle that we have, which is like a lightning bolt in the sky, like a lightning bolt, and the fact that it lasts like that, really. You know, if you think I'm in my second half of my life already, where did that time go? You know, what happened to everybody? No, and so many changes, constant changes of people and friends and parents and relatives and relationships with others, you know, with our siblings and our cousins, and how it changes so much, and how people are coming in and out of our lives through work relationships, and, you know, just watching this mind still, you know, gravitating towards happiness and pleasure. And, you know, the Dalai Lama says we deserve happiness. We deserve it. But just really watch the way you obtain it and the way you relate to others in your quest to obtain it. Because we do and act and say things that are sometimes so focused on self-interest, really, rather than on, you know, what's the benefit for all here. And so it's really important for us to see, you know, given the fact that this life is fleeting, what are we doing towards accumulating the potential to be an enlightened being for the benefit of all, you know, to be beneficial to others rather than just using others to obtain our own pleasure. So so what a lot of these first turning teachings are, Four Noble Truths, are looking, being able to look at our situation, our life, the way we handle ourselves, the way we speak and conduct ourselves around others, and to look at the places of where we're hurting, you know, where are we hurting? And by looking away and turning our eyes away, our eyes and our awareness, you know, what we're doing is aspiring for help myself, get it for myself, and what we need to do is just bring our wisdom to this bodhicitta awareness, you know, this awakened mind, this compassion and wisdom for others, rather than just you know, this is what I want, and therefore I'm going for it. So one of my teachers was saying, you know, to be able to just look, to be able to look and see the way we're conducting our lives, our speech, our actions of body, our mental attitudes, you know, is transformative. We can transform ourselves. We keep trying to get others to fit us, right? But if we can transform ourselves, then we can be more accepting and receptive to others around us. You know? We keep trying to fix them to suit us. So, so this practice, you know, the first noble truth of suffering and the cause of suffering, is really being able to look and be present with those uncomfortable places, to be able to handle that, you know, to pay attention to it. So, so you know, in one of my classes, the entire course we studied was on suffering. So that we can be, you know, it's like, what do they call that? It's the entire course is being able to unpack it, you know, so that we can really see, because if you understand what the suffering is and how it's being stimulated, created, and cultivated, then you can begin to understand what cessation is all about, what cessation of suffering is about, you know, and how you can stop it. But we just kind of run around, you know, pleasure-seeking vehicles, trying to obtain more and more happiness without really analyzing and looking at what's going on as well. So, any questions, comments? How does that apply to you? No comments. Okay.
It seems very logical. A few weeks back, you were talking, or maybe it was on Sunday, about we have this suffering because we have karmic causes. Mm-hmm. So when we when something happens, and you have the option, something like a car accident, and you have, you could get angry and you could get frustrated and you could have those negative emotions, which wouldn't help at all with the karma. It would cause, seems like those emotions would cause more difficulties. Or the other option might be to meditate. And so then not only are you not causing further negative actions for yourself, but you also get to experience that relief of, oh, good, something bad happened, so I'm repaying a karmic debt, and center yourself on how that could be a beneficial thing in the long run.
I saw a big question mark pop up here. Yeah.
Kind of episode for
an episode
that happens, some, you know, earth time, earth sized pile of bones in the past. And could it work the other way?
What do you mean by work?
Well, you're having a hard time now. Could it be for something that's going to happen in the future?
Depends on how you're dealing with it. Yeah.
Because while you were talking just now, and it was a few pages back, but you kind of explained my yesterday. I mean, it was just like, oh, that's exactly what I was doing yesterday. And today I didn't have it. But I've really been, like, super aware of what's going on with, like, this person is really annoying me right now. They're doing a lot of stuff I don't like. And there's more than one of these people. And the thing is like, my head's going, don't let this, you know, dictate how you are going to react or how you're going to feel. I'm doing the guy back there that I'm just keeping my mouth quiet. But then I have this sensation of like, you keep being quiet and you're going to get walked all over.
Yeah. Any comment? Chance you take. Yeah. Well, let me see. What Nancy was saying with, I should be happy because I'm paying off some karmic debt from the past. So sometimes what the teachers say is that, you know, something difficult happens to you. So you look at, well, realizing that we're interconnected. No, we don't live in a vacuum. We're not isolated. So what was my part in this too? And you look and see, you know, what was my contribution to this going in? Maybe you were considerate going in. But something occurred, and it was really difficult and upsetting, causing anger, causing upset. You know, it's like, okay, well, how did I contribute to this in my own actions? No. And sometimes, you know, something occurs, and you check back and check back and check back, and you say, I'm innocent. I don't know how innocent we totally are, but I'm innocent with a halo over our heads. And think, well, you know, if that is arising and in general, my intention, my actions of speech, my conduct was pretty clean, then it must have happened in a time. I must have created the causes in the past. No, it's like someone was saying, you know, it's like, so a person steals from a bank and they have all this money and they're really happy and they don't get caught. So we look on it and say, you know, how does this guy do rotten things and get away with it? And enjoying his life and just being, you know, living it up. It just doesn't seem right, especially if you think about karma, right? But it's what he or she is doing at that time is creating the causes for a future result. No, maybe they don't get caught this lifetime. And we think, we're scot-free. But in fact, you're creating the causes for a future result. When, you know, if you don't get caught this lifetime, another lifetime, you get ripped off, you get robbed, you lose things, you can't keep anything. You know, and you're going, where did that come from? You know? And so it's like, it happens in both ways too. You know, it's like you do some really excellent actions, you engage in really kind favors and helping others, and your heart is really into it to benefit others. And yet still all this rotten stuff happens to you, you know? And you think, gosh, you know, it's like it's kind of useless, or what's the benefit of doing these kind of things? But, you know, it's like this is where that bodhisattva, that bodhicitta attitude, you know, this intention to benefit others, to work towards enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, you know, it's like all this stuff is going to ripen and come up. You know, because we're purifying too. It's like this lifetime, although we have this precious human life, right? I read that verse, this precious human life, so hard to obtain, but we've obtained it. Yeah, so easy to lose, and we will lose it. Now, yet still, it's like it's a gift in a way of our own predecessors. You know, we created the causes to have this human life, to have an interest to really think about things worthwhile, to engage and do things for others, you know. It's very precious. Okay, bodhisattva. Bodhi is a Sanskrit word that means enlightenment. Sattva is like being, so a person who is on the path toward enlightenment for the benefit of all. You know, like the Dalai Lama. You know, he is unrelenting in his actions of body, speech, and mind, of his projects, of his wish, of his view, constantly, you know. And yet he lost his country. He lost, you know, the first year out of Tibet, they say that, or the first few years out of Tibet, they say they lost 100,000 Tibetans from war and pestilence and hardship and dysentery and everything else. You know, it's like, how does he sustain a buoyant, joyous wish to continue to help others? You know, I mean, really, when you think about what the Dalai Lama has lost and what he went through, it can become very depressing. You know, how does someone keep going? So bodhisattva is a being who has really aspired and taken a promise, an intention, but also engages in the actions to become the best person they can, you know. I love how His Holiness says, you know, it's like as he develops and you keep developing, and in the path to enlightenment, it's not like we're always going up, you know. We don't always have better and better births, no, unless we're creating the causes for it. And you know, it's like here we have this precious life now. Somehow we created really good causes for it. And why is it precious? It's because of this consciousness, for one, but the consciousness that really aspires to really be of benefit. You know, otherwise it's not that precious. I think. Although, you know, Geshe Gelson and His Holiness would consider all of us precious. So, yeah. So, you know, we're creating. So that's why Nancy was saying, you know, it's like you something really difficult, negative happens, and you can say, wow, you know, it's ripening. Something's ripening from the past. Something's coming to fruition and ending. And therefore, it's ending and I can keep going. You know, so it's a beautiful way of looking at difficult conditions in our life. But it doesn't mean you keep, you know, tripping yourself up by engaging in negative actions. Yeah. They say that when you engage in virtuous, positive actions, the result is always happiness. always happiness when you engage in virtuous actions. And even though it appears that someone who does negativity can obtain happiness and pleasure and fame and all of those things, you know, there's still the underlying karma that has been accumulated for that. So the negative ripening of it hasn't occurred. That's why, you know, they say if our karma ripened instantly, we'd conduct ourselves a little better. Right? Yeah. Want to take the mic, please?
The challenge is, though, is it's so, it's, you know, having that mentality is, I think for some of us, like myself, we're far off from, you know, having that mentality in the moment that we experience something negative. Really, it's more like a knee-jerk reaction that we, most of us, have.
Right.
Because we experience the negative effect, and then all of a sudden we just get into it, you know, and you know, myself, there were moments when, you know, it's just like, well, screw you type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's the challenge, you know. But, I mean, it can happen because there have been times when I have caught myself and, like, stop, you know.
Yeah.
I still don't think it's like, oh, you know, I'm burning off negative karma. But, you know, at least you're, like, fuming inside and you're like, okay, keep it cool, you know.
Right, right. Like Carrie was saying, you know, I bit my tongue and I didn't say anything, even though the upset was arising.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that you make a good point. But, you know, that's what our practice is. And that's what, you know, our taking advantage of this precious human life is, you know, how are you practicing? How are you dealing with negativity and pleasure and all these different things that occur in our life? And particularly, as Lama Tsongkhapa was saying, realizing that all these worldly things are but winnowed chaff. Do people know what winnowed chaff is?
That's the part
that blows away. That's the husk. You know, it's like shaking the husk off barley or rice or any of these grains, and that's the part you don't want, and you keep the grain. So all of those activities and actions that we do, and you know, are like running after and collecting winnowed chaff, which is really fruitless and empty at the time, particularly at the end of our life, or when you really think about if we are accumulating karma, then we should be more mindful. You know, we should try to check ourselves and observe rather than knee-jerk. You know, how about establishing and cultivating a knee-jerk of compassion? You know, a knee-jerk of sympathy for the situation, including yourself, and really checking it. And there was, you know, I forget which scientist it was, but one of these scientists asked His Holiness, you know, well, what if we prove you wrong? You know, that karma is wrong, that doesn't work. Then His Holiness said, then we'd throw it out. We'd give it up. You know, but you got to prove that to me, he said. You know, and also he said, well, you know, if you don't experience or you don't receive the consequences of your actions, then live it up, he says, you know. Drink, sex, everything. He says, go for it. But he said, you know, this, it was really amazing. He said, if there's some smell, even some smell of liberation, some smell of nirvana, that you could transcend this suffering existence, then it's important for us to go for that. Because otherwise we keep just milling around in samsara. So this whole practice of the bodhisattva, taking up the wish to be of, to really the aspiration to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, you know, of purifying all our negativities and delusions and acquiring and accomplishing all the excellent actions of sympathy and love and generosity and patience, you know, is worth it, you know, if it really leads to a bigger heart, to deeper understanding of the suffering of others, you know. And so often, because of our own suffering, we're pushing others away because of our own suffering, when we're forgetful of the other's suffering or the other's limitations. And that's what they say samsara is, you know. Samsara is limited existence. It's unenlightened existence. And we keep expecting everyone to intuitively know what I need so that you can benefit me. You know, and we really become like babies sometimes, demanding that of others, you know. When really other beings are struggling and trying to understand too. And they've got their own past histories and hang-ups and trauma and suffering in their lives. No, we all do. So it's, you know, this whole side of looking and seeing others suffering, having compassion for your own suffering. My teacher said it's the analogy of the Buddha seeing us in a nightmare. The Buddha means awake, a being who's awake, seeing us in a nightmare, going through all the conniptions that we go through. No, thinking this is right and this is the way things are, when all we're doing is creating more karma. No. So this is also why it's important for us to check our motivation, check our intentions, because sometimes, you know, our intention is good, but it still comes out hurting, harming even. So, which is why it's important for us to just kind of keep expanding our view, expanding our understanding, generating and acquiring more wisdom so that we see things more accurately. Because we tend to be pretty focused on, you know, my friends, my view. My friends think like my view. And then, you know, when something changes, you realize, you know, you're kind of popped out of that and you need to expand again. So to keep, you know, just keep expanding your own consciousness. So, why don't we contemplate that for a few moments, really look at your own situation, and then we'll have a little bit of discussion, okay? So we'll just sit again for 5 minutes. You can do a scan of the past few days. Observe the roller coaster of emotions that you went through different interactions and work, home, commuting, being with others. observe attachment, aversion, confusion. Judgmental mind, competitiveness, but also sympathy, joy, compassion. So as you look at these different things, emotions that you experienced in the last few days, observe the particularly the intention that was behind those actions. So observe, were you being selfish, compassionate, judgmental, understanding? What was going on? Okay. Okay, so you can turn to someone that you don't usually talk to and kind of share what came up for you. How'd you do?
Did all right. I noticed judgments, criticizing. One thing that came to my head is I tend to judge and criticize people I care about and love the most.
Yeah. It's almost like we're more critical of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I had a basketball game on Sunday and wasn't turning out the way I wanted it to. I found myself getting really angry. I generally let things roll off, but I got real competitive, stormed off the court, without it. Heard the word. Wasn't turning out the way I planned. And in doing so, though, I noticed
so shift sharing if you haven't changed your story. Shift share persons. The next person can share.
Okay. Thank you, partners.
Thank you.
So, how'd you do? This suffering of the microphone.
Oh, that wouldn't be funny.
Oops. You'd think it'd be easier to wear, but maybe it's because I have glasses too. I don't know. Okay. So what do you think of this precious human life? There's so many, this is your package, you know, your package of your vehicle to enlightenment. It's constantly teaching us. And so it's not only our just our physical body, but it's all our senses, you know. Our senses are constantly giving us a lot of information and input. And but it's the consciousness, it's the mental consciousness that's kind of scrutinizing everything, saying this is good, this is bad, this is acceptable, this is not acceptable, this is pleasurable and happiness, this is not, you know. And it's like this mental consciousness is like on a kind of ramped up high fire discriminating decision maker about, am I happy? Is this happiness? No. And so, but it's also really important to be careful and to look at, you know, the bodhisattva intention, the bodhicitta intention. Yeah. So as Lama Tsongkhapa was saying, yeah, contemplate this and you will realize how all worldly actions are but winnowed chaff. And day and night you must extract some essence from your life, which is like a lightning bolt in the sky. Now, and just really think about that. It's supposed to rain tomorrow, right? Think about that when you see lightning next time, that how the teachers so often equate our life to a lightning bolt and how fleeting it is, you know. And it's just measured by the year you are born and the year you pass. Yeah. I, the yogi, practice this way. You, wanting liberation, do the same. So, you know, it's your life and your practice. And it's not just, you know, who you're studying with and who you're receiving teachings from. But this is your vehicle. This is your opportunity to really watch the mental attitudes, the interpretations that we go through as we engage in things. Because it's a very profound teacher for us, this human life, this body, you know? So they talk about how we have all these different realms of existence. And let me see here. Did I already go over the 18... The precious human body? 8 freedoms and 10 endowments. That's what we are. We have 8 freedoms and 10 endowments. Okay, so when you think about this fully endowed human body, it has 8 freedoms, and what are they? 4 freedoms from fetters within human existence. freedom from fetters. Firmly holding wrong views such as nihilism or disbelief in the law of cause and effect. You know, we have freedom from that. Or we have the mental clarity to be able to analyze that. Is that true or not? You know? And it's really important for you to look at that and analyze it. Like His Holiness said, you know, prove it. And you need to prove it for yourself. Because otherwise, if you don't analyze it and prove it for yourself, you're just going along la-di-da-di-da throughout your day, not checking. You know, if you really think about it and analyze, is that true? Then, you know, it's like you begin to help loosen up the knee-jerk reactions. You know, you begin to be a little more conscientious about what you do and say and think, because you're really analyzing this view. We're free from being born in a totally non-religious or barbaric land. Free from birth in a land where no Buddhist teachings are taught. Free from being born as a demented or mute person. Now, that might not be politically correct in some ways, because there, you know, I mean, what this essentially is saying is, you know, really appreciate the faculties that you have. Yeah, really appreciate the faculties you have. And the four freedoms from non-human types of birth, whether you believe them or not, it's, you know, freedom from being born in a hell, in a preta realm, or a hungry ghost realm, as an animal or a long life deva or god. So, you know, most of the Tibetans say those are actual places. Do the Chinese say those are actual places too? You have to ask them. They're paths. They're paths. They consider them paths. Okay. 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 Don's a Chinese translator, Dharma translator. thank you. But they're also mental states. And we'll stop after this, but they're mental states. You know, think of like a hellish state you're in when, you know, it's like your world internally and externally is just raging fire because you're angry, yeah? Or frozen cold internally and externally because you're just so angry or shut down that your world is frozen, you know? So, hell, the Preta realm is hungry ghost realm where everything is, you know, again, a mental state of never being satisfied. It's never enough. Whatever it is, it's not enough. It says, where continual hunger and desire prevent any practice of the Dharma. Birth is an animal, you know. It's so interesting that the Tibetans have a concept for certain beings called chiza, which means these little critters called smell eaters. Smell eaters. Like somebody was saying to me, you know, that my dog can just smell something, you know, halfway across the parking lot, or we'll just make a beeline in the shopping center to the pet store or something. And I said, yeah, and also think about how they can just go to something and put their nose in it. But they're called smell eaters, you know. It's like really driven by the sense of smell. I mean, our smell is pretty limited compared to other creatures. And then birth as a long life god, you know. Think about times when you just feel so full of yourself. that you are totally the cat's meow, and you know it's nobody can touch you or talk to you, and you're just kind of impervious to comment or care. So anyway, so you can think of them as actual places or really as mental states. Is that what you meant by paths? Kind of more like that. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we'll continue with the 10 endowments next week. So we'll end here and do the dedication. Dedication is on the last page, generally, where it says dedication of merit. So think about really dedicating your efforts. You know, you could have done any number of things tonight, but we had an opportunity to really discuss some ideas together and really think about karma and how precious our life is and utilizing it well. So dedicate the merits to really attaining more humor. More generosity, more sympathy and compassion in our relationships with everyone, to also be patient with ourselves and as we develop on the path to enlightenment, okay? Because of these merits, may I quickly become Guru Lord Buddha and lead each and every sentient being into his enlightened realm. May the precious bodhicitta that has not yet been received be received. And may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. May the precious view of emptiness, shunyata, that has not been received be received. And may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. So the mandala offering is really offering the merit and all things. You know, it's like, think about offering everything you have, including your precious human life. Yeah? Because at the end of life, we lose it all. We have to leave it all behind. So imagine just generously giving it away and saying, you know, however sentient beings can utilize my body, speech, and mind, may it benefit them. And then imagine offering it to your spiritual teachers as well. By the virtue of offering to you assembly of Buddhas visualized before me, this mandala built on a base resplendent with flowers, saffron, water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as with the sun and moon, may all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamneya Tayami. And the long life prayer for His Holiness. In the land of snowy mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. Lord Chenrezi, Tenzin Gyatso, may you stay until samsara ends. Okay, so there are flyers in the bookstore for our weekend events coming up really soon. So, please take some and give them to friends, inform them of it. And also, just for your information too, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is being awarded an award from Amnesty International at Cal State Long Beach on Wednesday morning, May 4th. And so you can get tickets for that through the Carpenter Performing Arts Center. It's just a small hall. But, yeah. Oh, the flyers are out there? Okay, super. Yeah, we have all kinds of amazing activities happening here through the center, too, so there are flyers for that. So it's the weekend leading up to the Dalai Lama's visit here on May 1st. Okay, so have a good week. Thanks. So we'll do our